Okay, the next matter for this afternoon's session is case number A22-0077 State versus Samuels. Mr. Kosmicki, are you available?
I'm here.
Can you hear me okay?
Oh, okay.
Can you hear me? I'm here physically.
Perfect. Okay, there we go. Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready whenever.
Please proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Matt Kosmicki. I represent the appellant in this matter, James Samuels. This is kind of weird. I don't know where to look. I'm used to you up here. Jarrell Samuels, not James Samuels. Mr. Samuels appeals his conviction for two counts, possession of a firearm by a prohibited person and possession of marijuana greater than a pound, and his sentence. He assigned six errors on appeal. The first is that the district court erred by overruling his motion to suppress. At the motion to suppress, the district court kind of assigned two reasons, and the state argued the same thing, that there was consent, there was reasonable articulable suspicion justifying the search, and that also there was consent that was part of that. As far as the reasonable articulable suspicion, we argued that the stop was illegally extended beyond the purpose of the traffic violation. There's no doubt that whether you look at Van Akron or State versus Hartzell, or I'm gonna say this wrong, Barbow, a traffic stop. Traffic stop is a seizure for Fourth Amendment purposes. If you look at Exhibit 4, after issuing the warning, less than 5 seconds passes before Officer Hudak stops Samuels to ask more questions. Samuels hasn't even exited the car yet. He just had cracked the door open. Hudak never said to Samuels, you don't have to answer these questions. There's no temporal break. Don't question the original purpose of the stop was to issue a traffic ticket. And the traffic ticket has been completed. And it wasn't consensual to further questions. Hudak assigned a number of reasons for reasonable articulable suspicion. I'll answer them in those orders, in the order they assigned to them. Inconsistent.
Mr. Kosmicki.
Yep.
Okay, and this is the right way to look. Thank you. That helps us. I was the author judge on State versus Thompson. And so you kind of related this case in some ways to that case. But I feel like there's a significant distinction because it's an important one with regard to the questions that were asked, you know, after the traffic stop had concluded. And that is, was the traffic stop concluded? And was there an ability of your client at that point then, was he free to leave and get out of the car? He had started to. There was nothing obstructing him from continuing to leave. So the fact that he stayed and elected to answer questions, doesn't that now become voluntary and therefore his consent is valid?
Well, we argue that it wasn't, because the fact is that I know that Thompson's in her car, and the facts are a little bit different. In this case, Samuels is back in Officer Hudak's car. The traffic stop had just, well, the issue of citation had just happened. I think there was less time between the break and Thompson, between the traffic investigation. And Thompson, I believe the officer took her materials, went back to the car, his own car, ran his computer check, then came back and stood in the doorway and asked her further questions. In this case, Samuels isn't even in his car and can shut the door and go. He's in clear back in Officer Hudak's car.
But he's told he's free to go, and he's actually starting to exit the car. He could have continued to exit the car. It's different in that way, right? The officer is not obstructing his ability to leave. He could have turned and simply said, no, I have to get going. I mean, there was nothing to stop him from doing that.
Well, the way I review or see Exhibit 4, which is the traffic stop, right? And I didn't see Thompson's traffic stop. All I can go is off that record and what facts were recited. When Officer Hudak says you're free to go, Samuels just cracks the door open. He doesn't get very well far open. And it's the tone and the rate and the escalation of questions beyond a mere traffic ticket that indicates that Samuels isn't free to go yet. He says, hold on a minute, I got to ask you some more questions. And he very forcefully says, I've been on the road. I see all sorts of things. I need to know, is there anything illegal in your car? Is there any guns, large amounts of cash, illegal, substances, all those things. And I think it's how soon in the tone that Hudak uses with Samuels indicates that it's still a continuation of him taking him out of his car, out of his own car, bringing him back to his car and holding him there. When you're in your own car, you can shut the door and go. There's that indication you're free to leave. But in this case, Samuels wasn't anywhere near his own personal car.
Were those the officer's words? Did he actually say, hold on?
Yeah, I thought he said, I'm pretty sure it's been a long time, but I'm pretty sure he said something like, hold on, I'm going to ask you a few more questions or something to that effect, or can I ask you some more questions? Something like that. That stops Samuels. I mean, Samuels just doesn't stop and open the door or stop and close the door and sit there and talk. I believe Officer Hudak said something to, I need to talk to you. Or I need to ask you this question, something like that. It's in the record. I defer to what the record says.
Okay, thank you.
My time's going fast already. So I need to talk about the elephant in the room. The state's written in their brief that Ms. Samuels waived the motion, those issues written in the motion to suppress because he didn't continue to object to each and every witness after that. Being the trial counsel, I raised the motion to suppress, renewing it several times on the record. The district court judge, the county attorney, knew what I was trying to do to preserve the evidence, and I was attacking the motion to suppress, preserving that issue for appeal and any of that evidence related to that. Now, I've read the Lohman decision, and I see what that says when Judge Castle says that. And I just think that kind of rule deprives a defendant or an appellant of his, right to preserve a case for appellate review. I mean, if this court decides that wasn't preserved, we all know it's going to happen. I mean, I'm going to say I'm ineffective. So I think there was no question of anybody in that trial that I was trying to preserve that motion to suppress and any of the evidence that was seized from that seizure and search of the car.
Counsel, are you talking about the motion to suppress or the motion in limine with regard to the information on the cell phone?
I was just referring to the motion to suppress now. Okay. The motion in limine, that's a separate issue, and I have to talk about that. So we filed a motion in limine to prevent some of the issues or some of the evidence coming from the phone, which was seized during the motion to suppress and then searched. It was another objection to that kind of evidence. Is I was going to raise that on a different grounds, but I understand. I feel like I wrote this brief before the case that was cited by the state came out about cell text messages and those things being able to come in. What Samuels would like to point out in that case is that there was, I think there's, they even cite something about a foundation, and I know I can't find it right now, but. That foundation has to show that the person is or something along the lines of who sent those text messages. It's in their brief. I can't remember right now, but there was evidence. I don't think there was sufficient evidence other than Samuels had the phone at one point and maybe had used it at some point, but there was plenty of other evidence that someone else had used that phone. The co-defendant was using it when the officer seized it from him in the car. There was a name referred to in the text or something of Kaderi. That has no association with Samuels. There was plenty of other evidence that shows that anybody else could use that phone. And so I don't think there was sufficient foundation. Plus, it's bad acts that I think they had, other than our motion in limine, there was no hearing outside the presence of the jury to where they could prove that those bad acts were committed by the defendant or by the appellant. So I think it was an error there to overrule our motion for the text message is not coming in. And it's interesting, the state puts in their case when we're talking about what they shouldn't have granted the state's motion in limine, where the facts are so intertwined and it provides context. Well, that's our same argument. That thing provides keep those things out. I got that turned around. Sorry, I'll strike that. Let's see. Also, I guess as far as the motion is pressed, I think that there wasn't a sufficient attenuation that from the original reasonable tactical suspicion, the illegal Fourth Amendment violation that now that would justify the consent being also an issue to the search. And for the reason I cite my brief, and I'm really into my rebuttal time, I'll say what 30 seconds I got.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Liss, how are you?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm well, how are you?
Very fine. Are you ready to proceed?
I am.
Please do.
May it please the court, counsel, Nathan Liss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Samuels assigned six errors on appeal. State intends to focus on the first two claims, which pertain to the denial of Samuels' motion to suppress and the granting of the state's motion in limine regarding DeMarco Pope's convictions. As far as the first issue regarding the denial of Samuels' motion to suppress, the state maintains that Samuels waived his motion to suppress with respect to the physical evidence that was admitted at trial because the record reflects that he renewed his motion to suppress during the testimony of the state's first witness, Officer Hudek, but did not renew his motion to suppress during the testimony of several subsequent witnesses who testified about the physical evidence that was seized in this case. Our case law is clear that an objection obtained during one witness, even if it's a continuing objection, does not apply to subsequent or other witnesses. So we maintain that Samuels waived his motion to suppress with respect to the physical evidence that was admitted at trial in this case. As far as Samuels' statements in the cruiser after the traffic stop, which we submit as the only aspect of the motion to suppress that was preserved, we maintain that the motion to suppress was properly denied because there was nothing unlawful about the continued interaction following the traffic stop. The continued interaction was consensual and or justified by reasonable suspension or suspicion in the state's view. So we submit that the statements were lawfully obtained. But in any event, as set forth in our brief, we would submit that any error with the admission of the statements was harmless in this case in light of all the other evidence that was admitted at trial, including the physical evidence.
Mr. Liss, would you agree with Mr. Kosmicki that there is a difference between this case and the Thompson case in a couple different ways? But in Thompson, the defendant was in her own car and the officer was standing in front of the door that had been opened. So she couldn't close the door and leave if she wanted to. So she wasn't free to go. We found that was an unlawful continuation of the detention. Mm-hmm. And in this case, though, he was in the officer's cruiser, which is an interesting distinction, because in a way there is an aura of being under the authority of law enforcement when you are sitting in that officer's car, right? And so if the officer says you're free to leave and the passenger steps out or the defendant steps out, I think there's no question that he ended the initial traffic stop and stopped his investigation, and anything thereafter would be voluntary. But in this case, Mr. Kosmicki's arguing the words of the officer and the way they were said, you know, that it was, hold on a minute, you know, doesn't that demand kind of an obligation by the defendant to remain and stay in the custody of the officer? And then if that's true, isn't that potentially an unlawful detention?
Well, there's sort of two parts to your question there, as I understand it. The significance of being in the cruiser and then the officer's statements, you know, what exactly did he say and what was the tone of it? Taking the latter question first, it's also been a while since I have listened to that traffic stop as well. So I'm unfortunately in the same boat as Mr. Kosmicki, and I don't want to misrepresent the record, but my recollection of that conversation, if my memory serves me correctly, there was nothing to the effect of hold on, or I need to, or I have to ask you some more questions, something that would affirmatively be saying, no, I have additional questions and you're going to stay and ask and answer them. My recollection of that conversation was that it was more to the effect of, hey, I've got a few questions if you're willing to answer them. And he said, sure. And then shut the door behind him and agreed to answer those questions. Again, I don't want to misstate the record. If I'm wrong on any of that, I apologize, but that is certainly my recollection of how this went. And I recall that conversation being perfectly cordial between them the entire time. And so I certainly don't remember that escalating or changing at any point. I think that would have stuck out in my head if that had happened. To your first question about the, you know, the fact that we're in a cruiser here and the significance of that, I would submit that doesn't really change anything. I mean, it is different than, you know, Thompson or, you know, the Hartzell case where the defendant is still in their car. So factually, it is technically different. But I guess I don't see why that would necessarily, you know, create, as you said, an aura of authority to the point where a person is necessarily acquiescing simply because of that fact versus some other circumstance. I mean, we have situations all the time where, you know, officers are present. You might have multiple officers present. They're in uniform, any number of things that come along with the presence of law enforcement would often indicate to somebody that, hey, you know, maybe I should stick around here and speak with police, but that's not our test. I mean, if that were the test, virtually any encounter when an officer is present in uniform is going to be a tier two encounter, and that's not the law. So we would submit that in this case, at least with the facts before us, given the very, you know, cordial nature of this conversation, as I recall it, at least, and the fact that he did, you know, officially hand him the paperwork and say, you are free to go, to the point that, you know, Mr. Samuels had opened the door and understood that he was, you know, had been released and was free to go. We would submit that on these facts, the fact that they're in an officer's cruiser at that time doesn't tip the scale to the point that we say, well, yeah, this automatically becomes a tier two. I'm not even sure how it could de-escalate and not become a tier two other than the person getting out of the car, walking away, walking back up, being in their car, and then the officer reapproaches, which just doesn't seem, practically speaking, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. If an officer just wants to ask a few additional consensual questions, why go through that whole process just to ask a few questions if a person is willing to remain? So
thank you.
With that, assuming in the event you do get to the merits, that would be our position that the consent and or reasonable suspicion would apply here. I assume you may be getting to the merits, at least with respect to the statements in this case, because I do think the motion to suppress was adequately preserved with respect to the statements. And you may be of the mindset that if we resolve it with respect to the statements, that solves the physical evidence as well. And I think that's fine. I guess the approach I took in my brief was that in our assessment, these physical evidence was not sufficiently preserved. And with all of that evidence, along with all the other evidence at trial, any error with the admission of the statements was simply harmless in this case, which is why I briefed it the way I did. But either way, we maintain that Samuels is not entitled to relief on the first assignment of error. Moving on to the second claim regarding the state's motion in limine regarding Pope's convictions, we maintain that this evidence was properly excluded at trial. As set forth in our brief, our case law is clear that a co-defendant's conviction for the same crime or crimes that a defendant is facing is not admissible as substantive evidence of the defendant's guilt. Conversely, or by extension, we submit that such evidence is also not admissible as substantive evidence of a defendant's innocence, especially when, as in this case, the co-defendant's conviction was not even final because he had an appeal pending at the time of the defendant's trial in this case, which would render that evidence inadmissible under Rule 609. There was no legitimate basis for introducing this evidence in the state's view, so we maintain that the state's motion in limine was properly granted and Samuels is not entitled to relief on this claim. As far as the remaining claims, I really don't have anything to add to my brief, so I won't waste your time unless you happen to have any questions on any of those remaining issues. If so, I'd be happy to do what I can to answer them. And if there are no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Judge Moore, Judge Bishop, do you have any further questions?
I have none.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And then I believe that there were, 39 seconds remaining here?
37 seconds, Your Honor.
37, I was close. Well, 37 seconds.
I think I want to point out that back to the thing in the car, why it's maybe a little bit different than Thompson case is that, I mean, I don't know what the tone was, but if you look at, I believe that the tone that was used by Officer Hudak when he stops Samuels for further questioning. And remember, at the same time, I believe on Exhibit 4, this is when another officer shows up, Deputy Mayo shows up. And so there's more police presence, and the tone and the types of questions that Officer Hudak is asking, you know, this is beyond just merely a traffic stop for speeding. This is there contraband? Is there illegal stuff in your car, which would indicate compliance? I see my time's up. So we'd ask for relief that you reverse the decision, the judgment and sentence in the district court for Mr. Samuel.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you both, counsel, for appearing today. The matter is submitted.